pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for coming this evening. It's not church or school. You can sit up in front if you'd like. We'll call the meeting to order. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Rafter.
Here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Gass.
Here.
Trustee Dennis is excused. To Ms. Bainan's delight, I will cover number two. Are there any modifications to the agenda? Is there anyone visiting who would like to see an item moved up or down on the agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda as submitted?
So moved.
Trustee Genrich, is there a second? Trustee Dart. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Announcements. I have an announcement. Some of you know this. We've been interviewing for a new village administrator, and it's been quite a long and detailed process. It culminated in an open house this last Friday here at the Village Hall, where we had four finalists for the village administrator. The search and screen committee met on Saturday after the candidates left the village and deliberated, and have sent a summary and all supporting information to the village board for their consideration in choosing a village administrator. The village board met in closed session right before this meeting to start those deliberations, and hopefully the board will have a choice within the next week or two. We're hoping that by the next meeting we'll have open session discussion and recommend or vote on extending an offer to one of the candidates. So we set a pretty aggressive timeline to try to get a new administrator in, and the timeline involved the new person starting hopefully in early August, and it looks like we hopefully will meet that that lofty goal. Any other announcements? Hearing none, we will move on to public appearances. Is there anyone who would like to speak this evening? You can speak on any item you wish. I think we'll open it up when we talk about the offender residency ordinance under item 7. So if you want to speak with regard to that issue, if you just want to hold your comments, we'll open it up then and have a discussion. Anyone else would like to speak on an issue? It could be any issue. We only can take action on items listed under the business section of the agenda. If there's any other item that you'd like to speak about, if you'd like to do it now. Nothing else? Okay, we'll move on to correspondence 5A. Ms. Bainan, would you like to read this?
On June 24th, we received a letter from Marion Schauer stating, I've recently been informed that Donald Bosnowski, Defrock priest, has moved to 1320 Hastings Street. He is a sexual predator who abused my grandson and also admitted to abusing at least 14 other children. For the abuse of my grandson, he was convicted and sentenced to a prison term of 31 years. Due to a technicality, he was released from prison after serving only 6 years. I am 88 years old and have raised my family and lived in my home for 53 years. It gives me great pain every day to know that he is living just 7 doors down the street. I would appreciate any help you can give me to have him removed from this area.
Thank you.
I think there's a lady in the audience that would like to speak to this.
Is there someone, is Ms. Schauer here?
The representatives for her. I didn't know when we were supposed to speak.
Okay.
I misunderstood.
Okay. That's fine. If you'd like to just approach the podium and give your name and address for the record.
Okay.
My name is Rose Schauer. I'm the daughter-in-law, but the godmother to the young boy that was abused.
I'm Sandy Schauer, a daughter, and David is my nephew.
The mother wrote the letter, and she is, correct, she's the mother of seven children, and we each have a day of the week that we go over there to take care of her, or check on her, and it was quite a surprise when her son, the father of the young boy who was abused, drove by for his day and seen the priest standing out in the front yard. Very much upset him, and when we did some more checking on it, we found that it was true that he was located there just several doors down. And it is causing a lot of distress for the family to know that he is right down the road. And we are not sure what the actions could be, but we really wanted to come forward and get your guidance. What can we do? How can we keep taking steps? There is no way that he can stay living in this residence this close to the family. Because, like I said, as family, this has affected all of us through this process. And each one of us has to go past that house knowing that he's living right there. It was very traumatic.
And I guess in regards to the further agenda item that you have, as far as there was no notification to any of the neighbors that we're aware of. So, you know, we know this, the background of this person, and, you know, it seems that there should have been some notification to the families. These offenders, they don't look like the boogeyman. In fact, they're probably on the charming side because that's how they groom their victims and such. And I feel that, you know, neighbors should be aware of what's going on, and so they can be vigilant and aware as far as their children, their grandchildren, visiting children that come to their houses.
We also had another concern with the park that you have, that Miracle Park, not very far from there. That's not more than maybe 2.5-3 at the maximum blocks away. And that park is frequented by special needs children. Granted, we're assuming that their parents are with them, but I don't know. I can't frequent that park often. To know that there's a sexual predator that close that could be just hanging out in that park also gave us a little of a setback.
I'm not sure the board can give you any guidance and advice right now, but you know, I do stick around for the discussion under item 7, and that we started talking about this probably a month ago with regard to both those issues. One, the notification process, and if there's something that we can do to help notify residents earlier than is being done right now. And we've had discussions about it's not always a requirement by the Department of Corrections that they notify the community, but it is a requirement of many offenders that they need to register in the village where they're going to reside. Some aren't required to do that even, and they're so there are sort of different levels of requirements for offenders depending on what their crime was and how much time they've served and whether their status with the Department of Corrections, and that sort of dictates whether or not the community gets notice. And what we've been trying to struggle with is there a way that the village could take it upon itself, that even if the Department of Corrections isn't required to notify people, that we could get notification to them. So that will come out in our discussions under item 7. There'll be some cases where people won't be notified until after the person moves in because we as a village won't know. They're required to register within, some of them, depending on their status, are required to register within 10 days. So they move in. As long as they register with us or with our direct enforcement officer or the sheriff's department, they're within they're meeting the requirements, and so the residents wouldn't find out until after the fact anyway. But we're trying to develop a system that notifies people as quickly as possible, even if it's after the person has already moved in. And then, as a separate issue, do we need to look at our ordinance and change the ordinance so that we don't have additional people moving into Alloway?
And I was amazed when I looked at the Wisconsin Sex Registry, and I looked for people listed within a mile of Hastings there, and it's just phenomenal how many are listed in that area. So,
thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak with regard to the correspondence?
Yes.
Are you related to Mrs. Schauer? Are you representing
no,
Mrs. Schauer? Okay. So we're going to pick up the discussion of the larger issue under item 7. The reason that we started is because these people were here actually representing Mrs. Schauer, who wrote the correspondence under item 5A. Is there anyone else who is related to or representing Mrs. Schauer since she couldn't be here? Okay. We will move on to item 6. Action regarding the adoption of Resolution 2014-12 amending the Village of Alloway fee schedule relating to certified survey map review fee. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gatz?
I move to adopt Resolution 2014-12.
I will second. Is there discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 7. Let me just give a little summary. I kind of did just a moment ago. So we've been talking about this for a little while now, maybe the past 6 weeks. And as many of you know, a long time ago when Green Bay implemented their ordinance to basically not allow offenders to live anywhere in Green Bay to encourage them to move to the surrounding communities or further out, we were very much motivated to adopt a similar ordinance so that people would pass up Alloway and move farther south, maybe to De Pere or further. But we did, instead of reacting immediately to what Green Bay did, we decided to do some research, both on the number of offenders that were living in Alloway and the surrounding area to see what the proportions were. And then on the effects of restrictive residency ordinances on sexual offenders and their behaviors. And the research, and this has been challenged because some of it comes from departments of corrections in other states, mainly Minnesota, but some of it is from the academic community, which would have not a vested interest in the outcome of any of this, was that if you don't provide offenders with some fundamental needs or supports, that they tend to go underground, and if they go underground, they have a tendency to reoffend. And some of those supports are, one, a place to live. Two, if it's a place to live, it's someone who can provide social support, like family, parents. And three, a job. If they are employed, they're less likely to reoffend. And the research suggests that if offenders have no place to live, they simply don't register. And so what they end up doing is living next door to good people who are law-abiding citizens, and nobody knows it. And this board at that time, and it was a different board, that we have three new members as of last April, determined that instead of putting residents of Alloway at risk by encouraging offenders to go underground, we'd much rather know exactly where they were, and to try to notify residents so that they can take precautions and make educated decisions about their own behavior. We also said that we would keep our eyes on the numbers of offenders that were in Alloway, especially relative to the surrounding communities, so that relative to our total population, we didn't have a disproportionate number of offenders living in Alloway. The mayor of Green Bay said numerous times before they implemented their ordinance that that there were an overabundance of offenders in Green Bay, and he wanted the surrounding communities to share in that burden. As this issue came up, namely with an offender who lives on Taft Streets, Mr. Brandt, we delved back into the data and found out that Mr. Brandt was initially allowed to, went through the review board in Green Bay and was allowed to live on Huron Street, where his parents live. Once he registered there as his residence, the neighbors didn't approve and forced the review board to take up the case again. The review board then reversed their decision, although they have nothing in their policies or procedures that allows them to do that, reversed their decision and decided that Mr. Brandt couldn't live there. Mr. Brandt then took up residence on Taft Street. His parents, I think, bought or helped him move into the residence on Taft Street. So it was a case where Green Bay clearly didn't want this person and shooed him away to Alloway. So as this came before the board, we started looking at the data again, and we looked at the data not only in terms of the number of offenders we have in Alloway to see if the percent or proportion is equal to the proportions that you would find in other communities, but the type of offender. We were worried that maybe this was happening more frequently, and even if we had the right proportion, we were sharing in the burden in Alloway, we might have been sharing over-sharing in the types of the more egregious offenders in Alloway. So we had Officer Lopnow do some dig down into the data, and he found kind of the opposite of what we expected that we might. He found that we didn't have a disproportionate amount of egregious offenders in Alloway, but we did, as of last November, have more offenders in Alloway than we sort of had an influx as of last November, which was very alarming and disconcerting to me. So as the discussions continued, one of the ideas, I think it came from Trustee Gast, was to consider, well, we took a two-pronged approach. One was to try to tighten up the notification system so that we could notify residents as quickly as possible, even if as quickly as possible meant only when an offender registered 10 days after moving in. We thought we at least should try to have a system where we could notify the residents in that community that an offender has moved in to your community. And then where possible, notify the residents that an offender would be moving in before it actually happened. And then the second part of it was to look at the ordinance. Trustee Gass suggested that maybe we could adopt an ordinance whereby if an offender is not allowed to live in a surrounding community or in another community, that we would not let that offender move into Alloway. So it would prevent such cases like what happened with Mr. Brandt in Green Bay. And that's where we sort of left it last time and sent it to the village attorney to get his input on the legality of doing something like that. And then because he serves other communities in the surrounding area, the wisdom of doing something like that, even if it's legal. So our attorney is with us here tonight, and Mr. Duffy, I think you're sort of prepared to give us a synopsis of your take on the situation. Is that correct?
I am, and it's pretty much in the context because I met with Gio Lopnow on the many prongs that you're exploring, but I can address this whole idea of if you haven't passed muster in another community, then ipso facto you can't be here. And I would not recommend that you do that. I think there's a number of legal due process issues with saying that if some board in another community, be it the city of Green Bay or the village of Howard, should make a decision that somehow would be binding and transfer travel with that person to another community, I think we'd have to set up our own board, our own review process, make our own determination, and I don't think that would work.
So the due process couldn't be that we convene, and if there's evidence to suggest the person has been rejected from another community, that couldn't be enough?
I think that could be evidence that person might not be suitable for our community, but I think you would also have to give that person a full hearing on the various standards that these boards have developed when they consider whether a convicted sexual offender with a child victim should live in your community.
Okay. So we need due process, meaning we'd actually have to have a detailed process that took into consideration multiple pieces of evidence. Not we would convene a board and they would basically say, well, here's the only piece of evidence that matters to us. The person's been rejected from another community. The answer is no. That would not be acceptable legally,
right,
because it would not be proper due process.
Right, and I think you even alluded to the fact that what just happened in the city of Green Bay, where they had no provision for reconsideration and reversing a prior decision, but based on public outcry alone, changed their mind, and sent this guy out of the city of Green Bay, ultimately living here now in the village of Alloway. Fortunately, these convicted sex offenders did not seem to have the resources to bring the legal challenges to this process. A couple of these residency restriction boards, like the city of Green Bay, village of Howard, village of Denmark, and the city of DePere just eliminated theirs, which is another that should probably be explored. And I have not talked to anybody at the city of DePere as to what investigation they conducted to arrive at that conclusion, because they went in the opposite direction. I have spent some time talking to the assistant city attorney, Jim Mueller, in Green Bay, because I'm pretty familiar with their process, because I brought sex offender boards into Howard and into Denmark. And in that process, we looked at the city of Green Bay, because we were going to recreate the wheel, and they had a process in place. And I can tell you that it's time-consuming, it's expensive, and should probably be factored. If you're heading in that direction, it should probably be a budgetary item, because it involves a lot of staff time. And I can't say for sure, but I think you're going to have a lot more appeals if you were to follow that path here in Alloway because of your proximity to the city of Green Bay. And the city of Green Bay being sort of the... People aren't going to move off to the rural areas because their job opportunities aren't there, their family support systems aren't there. They're going to be closer to the city, which puts them right either here or in the city of Green Bay.
Dennis,
but that's a long answer to a lot of questions I wasn't even asked. But
no, that's good information. I appreciate that. Is it legal or acceptable to put a moratorium on our current policy? Can we say, look, until we figure this out, we're not going to accept any additional offenders into Alloway until we kind of figure out how we're going to move forward?
I would not recommend that. Even if you were to just declare, and you can in zoning and other areas of regulation, but if you were to simply say that we are banning sex offenders while we figure this out from living in the village of Alloway, I think you're inviting an immediate challenge, because I don't think anybody's ever done that, saying, you're out, and then maybe it'll take us 2 years to figure it out. In the meantime, none of these people are free to reside here. I think you're inviting a lawsuit real quickly on something like that.
So the only option would be come as close to the constitutional rights as what Green Bay did, and basically restrict, change the ordinance for the time being to restrict it, to make it highly restrictive so that it would minimize the inflow of additional offenders into Alloway.
Some people are honest enough to say that that's the purpose of it. But if you're trying to be politically correct, what you're saying is we'll form a residency appeal board so that people who choose or would like to live in a restricted area, and that would be a map of the village of Alloway, and we already have a restricted area where you've got 50 feet from the yards from your playground, schools, wherever children are congregating. You would develop a similar map to that, probably with a distance factor of 500 or 1,000 feet. And then with those zones, you would see what you were left with in the village as the areas that would be unrestricted and the restricted areas. The appeals board would apply to those people who were convicted as sexual offenders or child victims who wanted to live in a restricted area. That would be the purpose of your board. And then they have various standards based on the person's criminal history, where they have to make a decision whether they should let them do that.
And you have
there's a fairly large number of appeals that are granted by the Green Bay sexual offender residence appeal board.
Which is why we're concerned, because the less egregious cases are being accepted back into Green Bay. Where do the more egregious cases go? Which is why we expected Officer Lopnow's research to suggest that maybe we're getting a disproportionate of the really bad cases here, but that's not how it shook out. Do you have to have a review board if you increase the restrictiveness of the residency?
These boards have been upheld because you're truly going to a certain class of, we don't have the burglar review board, we don't have the I Beat My Wife review board. We're talking about sex offenders, and we're talking about a particular class involving children, victims. And the courts have given the community some leeway in recognizing the need to protect children from these particular kinds of offenders. So you really, you know, it's a very specialized class of people that you're trying to discriminate against. And you would need a full board.
We would, if we decided to increase from 50 feet to 5,000 feet, and it was really a very restrictive map, would we be required to have a review board? Or could we just say, no, this is the map, and you can't live in these areas, and you can't live in these, and there's no review?
I think the net, people would look past what you did with your map and just say what they've done is they've created a map where you can't simply live. There's no unrestricted area that exists.
Well, no, there would be. There would be some place. I mean, what,
but
right?
I mean, you have to give people some recourse to live in those areas that you've restricted.
But De Pere just got rid of their board, so what do?
You can move there.
Yeah, they don't have any restricted area? I mean, at what point...
I think they have restrictions in the sense that we do in terms of your presence.
But not your residency.
Where you can be.
Okay.
But...
So once we start talking about residencies, not where you can... But we restrict residencies, don't we?
No.
You can't live within a certain...
You restrict the density.
Density. But no residency whatsoever. So you can live right next to a park. You just can't walk out your door and loiter in that park if you're an offender.
That's true.
Yeah, within 50 feet.
So across the street.
Right. So once we start having residency zones where you can and can't live, then you have to have a board that would review cases in which people wanted to live in a restricted zone.
Right.
Okay. Someone had their hand up, I'm sorry. Trustee Rafter.
Dennis, could we, right now, we're notified of when someone moves in once they register, right? 10 days after they move in, they have that time. Do we have the ability as a village to say, if you are of this class of sex offender, you need to register with the village prior to moving in? We're not saying yes or no. We're saying you need to register with the village.
I think you're suggesting that we create our own sexual registry for certain types of sex offenders by ordinance that would require them to notify us in advance before they attempted to reside in the village?
Correct.
I don't think you'd have any authority to require that.
Really? I was looking at the residency requirements in Green Bay, and you know, there's about three or four little white spots on their heat map where people can actually live. But for all the people who have come to these meetings, a residency close to a park doesn't matter. It's the kids next door or the families next door. So I don't know that a residency, you know, within 500 feet of a park really mattered to a whole lot of people that had been here. The common theme I hear from people coming to these meetings is, we didn't know. And we also don't know that anyone's checking up on them. So one option I thought of was, if they have to register with us just to notify us that they are moving in, and we know what, as a village, we know what the terms of their release from jail were, such as they have to get a job, other things that they've been telling them, you know, you can't have internet access, that sort of thing. If we had that little buffer, it wouldn't be so easy for people to move, to say, I want to go to Alloy. It would at least make them come in and stand up and say, I want to move to Alloy. I know the problem's a lot bigger than Alloy. The problem is Green Bay has an ordinance, we have an ordinance, Denmark has, everyone has a different ordinance. And I think the ideal solution is to raise the level of decision to either a countywide decision, and maybe Alloy could lead that effort, or even to a state. But I don't know that a residency requirement helps, but I was interested to know if we could get notification, understand what the terms of their release were, and to have periodic visits by our law enforcement, regular periodic visits by our law enforcement, to let them know that we're serious.
Well, those are all good ideas, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to let Officer Lockman explain a little bit more about the notification process, how it currently works. What I've discovered in meeting with the DEO is that the database for these sexual offenders that are registered is not real conducive to our purposes for identifying where people are living in our community, how we can compare that number to other communities, because it's all done by zip code. And it's, when you think about our need to know, the database isn't very friendly at all. But I'll let Rick expand a little bit more about this whole notification thing and some of the drawbacks and what we can and cannot do.
Okay, I'm feeling a need. Again, we took this two-pronged approach, and we're kind of vacillating between notification and the ordinance. So let's, I'm fine with going for the notification, but let's try to stick here at notification and see if we can come to some path forward with regard to notification, and then maybe take the ordinance. And I'll make sure to get our visitors involved throughout the discussions as well. But they are, I know they're related issues, but they're, you know, at least in my mind, when we vacillate too much in between them, I start to get lost in the different strategies and policies. Officer Lotnow.
As I put in a note for this meeting, the biggest thing that comes to mind for me when we talk about, well, it's an offender that's convicted of this offense, we should do this notification, or this offense, we should do this notification. When I was going through all the numbers that we talked about in the previous meeting, there was, I know at least one offender I found in Brown County that was trespassing. So, you know, what does that mean? Did it let down from something? How do we classify that? You know, if you look at the different offenses, you know, there's, I don't know, I can look at my memos here, you know, 20 to 30 different types of offenses that you have to remember that that person might have been arrested for a first-degree sexual assault, and maybe it ended up being a conviction of a second or third-degree sexual assault for, you know, various different reasons. You know, that's the way the court case came down. So I would just bring up that we may not be, you know, I think it would be accomplishing something, but maybe not. It's not so black and white as you think it would be. So it wouldn't be an easy undertaking either way.
But overall,
those considerations.
Right. Overall, Officer Lapnow, the Romeo and Juliet cases are going to look different as far as, you know, the pleading down process is going to take place at all levels. And so the Romeo and Juliet case is going to be much lower on the scale than the, you know, the first degree sexual assault of a child, right?
Right.
So your point's well taken that the lines between them are probably a little bit blurry, but overall it still paints a pretty accurate picture and can delineate between at least the ends of the continuum.
Sheriff's Department, and sometimes Officer officer gets contacted directly as a reporting requirement that that person wants to establish residency in the village. However, that often occurs, or more likely often occurs, after the residency has been established and the person is here. So we don't get the benefit in that instance of a prior notification that you're referring to, so maybe we could do something. So then we're in a position after the fact, I guess, tell people that somebody's here.
Right.
That after the fact information is also available on the state registry website. You can also receive a direct email notification if you choose to subscribe to the state service that now lets you know when somebody is coming to your area, your neighborhood. You can do a search, like some of the people have talked to, they've gone and looked at the map and done a search from their residence, a mile or an area, and see, you know, who's around me and what's going on. That's kind of it.
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying, and to me, the most compelling in that list is the email, right? So you get an automatic notification, because we can't expect people to go to the registry every 3 days and see if someone happened to move into their neighborhood who's on the registry. But you have to remember, not everyone in the village has an email account or uses a computer. And so is there any way that we could help in the process, even if it's after the fact, because the person wasn't required to register until after they already moved in, of letting residents know without... I mean, these people are finding out by mistake. This Mrs. Shower found out by the priest standing in one of the yards on her block, and other people on Taft Street found out sort of serendipitously. And, you know, I just don't think that's a great way for people to find these things out. If we really were serious about adopting our original ordinance that we wanted people to know, and that that education and knowing was more powerful, and so you can adjust whatever behavior that you're going to adjust as a result of knowing this information, we should do everything that we can to make sure that people know as soon as possible.
And as we've discussed, is transparency and information and knowledge is, I think, real important to the community, especially with these kinds of people. And the shower case is probably one of the most egregious I've heard about, where you've got to drive by somebody who's been a member of your family and you didn't even know that they were there, and then you see them, and you know, you're driving by and they're a few houses away from your 88-year-old mother or grandmother. If we do give notice, then the consequential follow-up to that is, then what do you do? So you've given notice to... Let's say pick an area. You want to notify all residents within how many yards of the residence of a sex offender. So you get, say, 40 or 50 neighbors now notified that this person's living there. And you can't do anything about it.
Right.
Well, what you can do is then Officer Lopnow can hold a community meeting for the people in that neighborhood to teach them how to be cognizant of what's going on, how to help your kids, help the neighborhood learn to deal with it, and then regularly visit.
And I don't want to cover grounds, because I know that Officer Lopnow spoke with you at length at a couple of other village boards, but I think he does still have a rather deep role or involvement as the DEO in terms of being aware of who's actually residing now in the village. We've had a few surprises, but... you know, you can address the level of your knowledge as to the sex offenders that are currently residing here. I think you have an ongoing list, and you constantly update it. And I think you take it upon yourself to monitor the status of these people. And I don't want to speak.
Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about, I have a continuing list, and you know, I'm signed up for the email updates now.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having to call the Department of Corrections to request an updated list, I've just been getting the emails. You know, as far as visits, you know, I think it's definitely steps we can take to stop there, confirm that they're living there. You know, I don't know what expectations of residents or, you know, the board would be as far as, you know, my discussions, you know, and who's their grants, because I didn't go over it.
think Trustee Raptor was thinking more of the residents than the offender. That, you know, so we find out someone has moved in 10 days ago, and then we go and notify them, and then the follow-up is, well, we have some educational sessions led by you as to how do you deal with the fact that there is now an offender living in your community, and what strategies do we want to take for, especially as we try to develop these neighborhood associations, and and then some routine, you know, stops not at the necessarily the offender's house, but maybe at the neighbor's houses, and how is it going this week, and this is what we agreed as a neighborhood we might try to do to make sure that everyone's safe, and that sort of presence, I think, not necessarily checking in on the offender. And I know you do that regularly with the DOC, right? The DOC is required in some, in many cases to go and check up on the person. I know you accompany the DOC on those visits. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm looking, I think, and not to mix them, but I'm looking for a speed inhibitor to speed the flow, to slow down the flow of them into Alloway. But also what you were just talking about, yeah, to really educate and work with the community. The, you know, what Officer Lepnow put together in our memo showed back from January through August of 2012, we were averaging 0.28 sex offenders moving into Alloway per month. And from 2 years later, from January through June, we're averaging 1.16 per month. And last month, because I'm on the notification, we had three move in. So we do have increased number of sex offenders moving into our area. I believe in part it's because of policies put in place in other neighborhood or other communities. And I just think it's a little too easy to move into Alloway. I'm not saying don't move into it, but I want them to know that we're paying attention, that's all. And that's where that notification would come.
Yeah, and I certainly wouldn't argue the fact that we don't have a restrictive ordinance, and that very well may be why we're getting the influx. Overall, compared to the rest of the county, you know, we looked at the numbers, I think, as I talked about it, you know, we have about 5% of the registered sex offenders in the county. You know, and what it, the village wants to do with the ordinance from here, you know, I want it to be the village's decision, you know, based on the facts that we're talking about, you know, and go from there.
What I remember from the data that you presented last time is that we're increasing disproportionately to the rest of the county.
Yeah, and that very well, you know, may continue. You know, and the other side of things is with, you know, there's never going to be less offenders overall being here.
Right.
You know, these people are, you know, continuing to get released from prison. If you look at the last couple of years, the internet crimes against children, operations that have been going on a couple times a year, you know, even some of the ones in Alloway as of recently, to recognize those names, and that's what that was part of. And they're coming out, whether it's a long sentence or a short sentence, in prison, they come out and now they have to register. So, you know, the numbers overall, not only in Alloway, but Brown County, Wisconsin, you know, nationwide, they're going to keep going up. It's not going to go down.
And I think we all realize that we're not going to get rid of this problem altogether and have an Alcatraz for all the offenders to do. But what concerns me is if we're getting, you know, disproportionate or a disproportionate type of offender living in Alloway, that I just don't think that I don't think that's fair to our residents. So.
And if we, you know, one of the frustrations, I don't think any of us received any notification of Mr. Buzanowski's move. Did we? I mean, he had allegedly completed his sentence.
Well, he's on active supervision.
So then there's not a requirement, right?
Well, he has to do a face-to-face, which we have set up through the Sheriff's Department. I'd have to double-check, but I believe I also talked to him, and I talked to the probation agent. And the reason I remember this is because he was actually looking at a place right next to Webster School initially, and I spoke with the probation agent about that, and they decided not to pursue that reference.
See, this is the part that is getting under my skin. And I remember this case across from Zesty's with this duplex where someone wanted to move in. And I don't. Why would the DOC in a million years ever consider putting this person next to Webster School? You shouldn't have had to get involved in that at all.
Or they.
So that's the part that, you know, the DOC needs to place these people or needs to find acceptable, approved places for them to live. They don't place. That was made perfectly clear to me. But they need, these people need places to live, and the DOC has to approve certain places. And so they're motivated to sort of push the limits of this, and I just don't understand some of the decisions. Dennis, do you, what recourse do we have if, you know, if it's a condition of the person's release that they're employed or that they're, and they've been seeking employment for 2 years, I mean, at what point do you say, look, this person doesn't have one of those factors that leads to success, and they're at risk of reoffending because they haven't found a job, or they're not living with someone that they know, or all the other conditions that they might have to meet. At what point do we call the DOC out and say, look, you gotta do something about this? It's not really a condition of someone's release if they're not doing it, and years go by.
I think the supervising agent has the discretion to make that decision as to whether a person's parole or probation status should be revoked for failure to meet the conditions. That can then trigger, and they can get them detained and thrown into jail based on a violation. But then there is some judicial recourse to have that reviewed, although most of the time, if they do make that decision, they've been in the game long enough, they know they got a pretty solid. But as to whether you can call up, or I can call up a probation agent and say, this guy hasn't found a job, can you move along the revocation process? I mean, you could try that, but I don't think that would be that successful.
As far as either of you know, do any offenders, I guess, living in LA, have their probation ever been revoked? And is it because of these, do you know why? Did they reoffend, or is it because they didn't find a job, or they didn't do?
This I do know is that if you look at the conditions of parole supervision or probation supervision for a convicted sex offender, where they can go, what they can do, their behavioral rules of conduct, they're quite extreme and they're quite specific, and if they screw up on those, usually they're gone. But now, I'd like to see you get a job. You know, that's more of a, everyone would like to see that happen. I'd like my son to get a job. But, you know, the conduct things are the ones that are really what they look real closely at. As far as the, Rick might know this from talking to the agents, but I don't, as to what kind of revocations we've seen in the village, or who's been pulled, and for what, and if you don't.
The only one I'm aware of that did get revocated due to a probation violation, I don't know exactly what the violation was, but he went back to prison for a year and has since been re-released, so this has already happened a couple of years ago. As far as the rules and the conduct, what we see on the law enforcement side is, say we come across something on probation that, however, we came in contact with them, whether it was a traffic stop, and then we find out while they've been drinking, and that's against the rules of probation. Those are the types of things we take action on, and we will contact probation and parole. I can't say if I've ever found out while you're on probation, you don't have a job, and you're supposed to have a job. That's not something I would typically follow up with probation and parole.
Which is very interesting, because they've really talked extensively about these predictors of success, if you will, and one of them was living with a support system, but one of them was having a job. And so if that's such a strong predictor of success, why are we not doing everything we can to make sure? And I know that it's probably hard to get a job if you're an offender, but still, we're sort of passing it off on, this would be nice, and then we're waiting for them to do something behaviorally that puts them at risk of recidivism, like drinking, and we're waiting for that to happen before we'll think about revoking. I'm not sure we're motivating the Department of Corrections to. I'm not like Trustee Rafter said. I'm not sure we're making it difficult on them and to do their jobs, to do them well, and to protect Dalloway. I think we're making it really easy for them. They need to help people find a place to live, and we're providing it. So I think we need to look at the issue again. I'm the one that said let's try to separate the notification from the ordinance. Do we have some idea of where we'd like to go with regard to notification? Trustee Gass.
Well, I think it's important to set the stage, too. I mean, we do have ordinances in place that do some things. We have a density ordinance to stop sexual offenders from congregating at a single location or in an apartment complex or at a hotel. So there is that. There is, you know, getting back to the Miracle League Park, there is an anti-loitering ordinance in place that, you know, certain registered sex offenders have to remain, you know, 50 feet away from places where children congregate, to include schools and parks. So there are some pieces in play that do offer some assistance. I'm a little troubled by the fact that, you know, we can't legally do an absolute bar to people that are rejected by other municipalities, but I guess I get it. There are some due process concerns because why they're rejected specifically in Green Bay is based upon the facts and the circumstances of why they wanted to move in Green Bay, and to maybe have an absolute prohibition might raise some due process concerns. So I guess I get that. In terms of ordinance-wise, then I think we're left with, you know, looking to increase, you know, residency zones, if that's the pleasure of the board, you know, to make it more onerous for people to move in, as Attorney Duffy alluded to. We probably then have to have, you know, some kind of a review board similar to Green Bay. So I think in terms of making it harder, that's the option I think that we have. I'm troubled as well by the fact that it seems like we're getting, you know, more. It's been in the recent past, the last 6-9 months to a year, it seems like we're getting a fairly large influx of offenders. So I think on the ordinance side, we have to take a look if we want to be more like Green Bay. I'd welcome us to take a look at some of the other municipalities that Dennis alluded to, like Denmark, and a few of the other ones that have them in place. Still not convinced as a matter of policy that that's the best thing to do, because when we decided not to follow Green Bay several years ago, we relied upon people from the Department of Corrections and academic sources that said, if you make it too hard, then they do go underground and you don't know where they're at. So I think we're going to have to take a look at it, because it's not right that we're getting a bigger influx of people coming into our community. So I think we've got to look at making it more harsh. I know we've always had a pretty active DEO program of at least monitoring and checking in with these people, and that continues under Deputy Lochnow, and I'd encourage him to continue that. I think Trustee Rafter's comment that maybe we offer some kind of community education when an offender has moved into an area, as to what they can look out for. I mean, I think that's a good idea to give them that kind of education. I think we do have to give notification. I think the DOC has the website. You get email alerts, but the problem is nobody knows it's there. And nobody even figures it out it's there until after somebody moves in a block away or three houses down. And then you figure out, oh, we could have known about that by an email, but nobody knows about that ahead of time. So I think notification-wise, I think this whole DOJ or DOC, you know, email and website information should clearly be available on our website. I think any time an offender moves in and we find out they move in, it should be posted on our website that so-and-so is living at this location. And I think we should even take it to a greater extreme, because, once again, I mean, people don't check the website. So I think we can develop a notification procedure that for certain, not that any of them are inconsequential or not severe, but for the very significant offenses, I think the village can take it upon themselves to issue mailed notice to residents within a certain radius of the location, because that's about the only real way people are going to know. You know, the board's working very hard to develop more active neighborhood associations, because that's a wonderful communication device, because then you can call one person from the village and they tell everybody else, but we don't have that in place yet. So I mean, those are just a couple of my thoughts. I mean, I think we may need to take a look at making our ordinance a little bit more harsh, a little bit more restrictive. If we got to take on some of that baggage, I think that's the debate we have to have at the board. And the baggage is, I mean, do we have a review council that, you know, similar to Green Bay? So I think I'm shocked by the Department of Corrections. I mean, to even consider placing an offender, you know, near Webster School is just idiocy to me. And I don't know how. They don't even check into things, and I think that should be something we make inquiry of, is, you know, Ms. Schauer. I mean, this
this guy is moved in, what, just houses away. You know, I mean, this is a victim's family. I mean, I don't know how the hell that one got through the system. I mean, you think you would, one would think that the great folks at the Department of Correction would at least check into where the victims and their families live before they release and approve the release of a convicted offender into the neighborhood of a victim. I mean, that's just stupid. Well, so I don't know who we're going to talk
that
to.
That requires a notification, though, Rick, right? Doesn't it?
It depends on the offense.
Okay.
You know, typically.
Well, but I'm assuming the DOC approved of this man living in Ms. Shower's neighborhood. I mean, they must have said, okay, you can go there. Yeah, am I right?
Yes.
I mean, my fault isn't with the village, and my fault is not with you. It's with the Department of Corrections not doing their due diligence. I mean, that's a no-brainer. I mean, when you're checking off the list on where you're going to put these people, one would think there'd be a block on the checklist that says not in the neighborhood of one of the victims or their families. I mean, that's just stupid. And that's not our problem. I mean, it's not your problem. I'm not blaming anybody here. But I'm thinking, you know, somebody needs to talk to one of our legislators because somebody needs to get on the DOC's back and tell them that just ain't right. You know, and I'm going to get a hold of my state legislator and talk to him about that because, I mean, that's a no-brainer. That's just a no-brainer.
Yeah, and I don't have the answer for you either, and I understand what you're saying, but I don't know how far they go if they just, the victim, him or herself, if that's who they look at, or how far they go down the family line, you know, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's worth a discussion with them because if it's not on their checklist, it should probably be on their checklist. So,
I mean, given that, couldn't we encourage the family with our support to contact the DOC, the probation parole officer, and say, hey, look, maybe you weren't aware of this, but this is the situation right now, and we'd really like him moved because any time any of us come and visit, we may have to see him. You know, it's an in our face kind of a thing.
We weren't sure what to do, so
right.
That's why we came here. We lived.
And I think that might be a good first step, or second step now.
Trustee Harris?
I don't know if this is a different approach we could take with Attorney Duffy's help, is that if, again, Trustee Gass said he'd contact his legislature, but if the Village of Alloway makes a contact to DOC saying, why are you doing this, why aren't you doing that, as opposed to Village of Denmark, Village Hobart, Alloway, wherever else you are working with, all coming together, going back to the DOC together, saying you've got now a group of X amount of communities, X amount of 100,000 people, saying this part of your process is not working. We're not allowing our residents to be notified of when things are taking place. That may get a little bit more attention than just us doing it.
It may, but what we can control is us, and what we can activate quickly is us, and I think, according to the DOC, they've got a pretty good deal in Alloway as far as not having to worry as much about rejecting applicants for residency. And so I think if we just blow up the big stick and say, look, this isn't going to be a place where you're going to have a very easy time from now on out, it might bring them to the table to look at their process of notification. If we use the residency stick, that might be some leverage for the notification process. I'd like to work out this notification part of it first, and
that's what I was looking
come up with some about. Ideas for that, and then I'd like to open it up to our visitors to sort of respond to that part of it, and then I'd like to talk about the actual ordinance, see if we have a preference for moving forward with reviewing that ordinance, open it up for our visitors with regard to a reaction to that, and then move forward. Trustee Gast.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, how to handle the discussion, that's a good point. I mean, my only, you know, cautionary note is I don't want to get into too much of a discussion on the legality of certain ordinance options that we have. I think that would be more appropriate for a closed session with our village council because, I mean, I don't want to sit here and say, well, you can do that, and you can't do that. Here's a problem you have legally if you do it this way,
right,
and do that in open session. So I think in terms of the nuts and bolts about where we want to go is whether it's legal or illegal, I think the legality and illegality should be discussed in closed session and not in open.
Okay. Point well taken. Thank you. All right, so Trustee Guest, you mentioned as far as notification, I think where you were going is let's figure out every way that we can get people notified as early as possible, understanding that in some cases the notification would take place before the person moves in, and in other cases it would take place after the person moves in. Because in the latter case, we don't know until after they move in. And you mentioned putting a link for the DOC, the registry, on our website. I think we've done that. Mm-hmm. Keeping an announcements section on our page when new people move in, and it's actually announced on the page of our village website. Again, people don't usually check the village website or the DOC website routinely. But then the third thing was for specific cases, and we'll have to decide what where that cutoff is, that there would be an actual either door hanger or a mailed notification to residents within a particular radius of the residents where the offender's going to live. Is that
exactly.
That's your three-pronged approach so far. Does anyone have any ideas to add to that?
I would suggest we notify the schools so that they can decide whether or not they want to inform their parents.
And then I think we could follow this through to the follow-up process, maybe, Trustee Rafter, to give Officer Lopnow some direction in putting this together, because this is not going to be an ordinance change. This is going to be a process change.
Yeah,
with regard to, you know, checking up or convening the neighbors and having a meeting or an educational session on, now that we know this is going to happen or has happened, how do we deal with it? Do you want to propose some ideas for that?
Yeah, I would suggest, as part of the notification, of course, to do a letter, but to do a mailed letter to, I don't know, 2-block radius of that person, and then include in that notification that we will have a community meeting at a certain point in time in Village Hall. If you'd like to come and talk to our DEO about ways to protect yourselves or what to be aware of, come on down. So I would do it right at the time of notification, because that way it just happens.
Question for Rick. I mean, through the department, I mean, you know, with the meeting, kind of meeting Jim's talking about, where people come in and say, and you're supposed to talk to them about what to be aware of and cognizant of and how to protect yourself. I mean, do you have resources through the department that you can, I mean, do you have to come up with, I mean, does the department have something that, you know, for community meetings like this that you could take, that you could access?
I know there's information from the Department of Corrections that's available that I would probably make sure we hand out. I mean, that's something we can even put out in the mailings. You know, it's a great idea to have a meeting, and Brad kind of just mentioned to me is talking about Neighborhood Watch. That would be the perfect time to
turn
on support for Neighborhood Watch if we can get people together.
Yep.
But, you know, as far as, you know, what are you going to do in your neighborhood, what to watch out for, I mean, it's not complicated.
And I think equally important is neighbors can sort of get together and develop a game plan as to how are they going to notify one another or keep watch of what's going on. Or
maybe rather than Rick having an automatic meeting, I mean, if there's a mailing going out and you could attach, you know, the DOC information on just what to be alert for, maybe you could welcome, you know, anybody who has any questions to contact you, or if anybody's interested in heading or spearheading a neighborhood watch program, to contact you. Because I don't want to add more meetings to your calendar, because a lot of times we set these meetings and then you sit there and nobody shows up. You know, so I think if we get them the information and say, if you have any questions, call our directed enforcement officer. And, oh, by the way, if somebody wants to take charge and, you know, and be a captain or a commander for a neighborhood watch program, I'd be happy to sit down with you and some people and talk to you about that. But I hate to set meetings for people and nobody shows up and there you sit. You know.
They would probably show up for this, but I still agree. I still agree with you, Trustee Gass. But make sure that it's perfectly clear that you're a resource for them. So if someone wants to be a neighborhood watch captain, then you're going to be there to help them every step of the way to develop it.
Yes.
Yeah. Trustee Durkin.
You know, we're talking about all these things, and it seems like it's falling on Rick, a lot of it. It's like, do we need to give him resources do we have to consider budgetary resources to help accomplish something like this? If we're coming up with all these ideas, how are we going to accomplish this? I know he's a busy man already, and you know, is there something else we need to do as far as our resources, or resources that he may need to accomplish some of this?
And aside from the mailings, this is just, I think, a redirection of his efforts. I think you mentioned this last time or the time before. You can't do everything. You can't spend, you know, 40 hours a week concerned with drug houses and spend 40 hours a week concerned with sexual offenders. So this is just sort of redirecting away from traffic and some of the other things that you might be doing and focusing on this problem. But other than that, the finances, I mean, the mailings, I think, is the only thing that we're really adding that would have any financial implications, as far as I can tell, so far.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at his time, and I don't want to disregard the drug houses.
No, right. I think, you know, what we're talking about here, I can come up with a form letter with the information we talked about, and just have it ready and be able to change out the information. I mean, it would just be a matter of arranging, like, you know, you said that the mailings, you know, if we want to go one block, two blocks from the residence, you know, it's going to
I don't think you have to go too far either. I mean,
yeah,
I would hope that neighbors would tell, when they received it, would tell neighbors, and it would get out.
And there is you did put together a Facebook page too, didn't you?
Yep.
Can that kind of information go on there?
Yeah. Everything that's public record, yeah.
Can go on
there. With the exception of the juvenile cases, it's all public record.
So as far as the process goes, it seems to me we haven't given Rick a clear indication of the radius for the mailing, nor the type of where the cutoff is in terms of the type of offense that we want to precipitate.
What do we typically do, Debbie, for zoning variant? 200 feet?
I would go farther than that with this.
Does it only be like two or three houses, depending on lot size?
Yeah, I would do like a one square or two square block area.
Do we have?
It seems like a lot.
I would hope that
neighbors would tell neighbors if they got something in the mail. I don't want it to be overkill.
You're better off expressing it eventually, because with GPS now and doing these mailings, they just go out. If you say 500, then that'll create the mailing list.
A radius?
Right.
Yes, a radius.
That way you're not...
Not a block. And not, yeah.
Right. Radius. I mean, what's up? You don't know. I mean, it's more work to figure out. That's what's done commonly a lot of the zoning modifications.
I mean, 500, 750, 1,000, what?
If you've got lot lines of 75 to 100 feet, 500 feet is going to get you 5 to 7 houses. I'd be more in line with probably like a 750. At least that'll get you in the neighborhood of a block. I think 500 is a little bit light.
Okay. You're talking the linear block, though. You have to remember it's going to go through the backyard as well, and across the street as well. So it's not just 5 houses. That's on the same street, on the same side of the street.
So
you're going to catch people. Okay. So that's 750, does that sound? And again, we're not finalizing this yet. I want to hear from our visitors with regard to the path that we're going down, with regard to notification. And then the type of offense.
That's the harder question.
You got
this person initially being looked at by DOC, the district attorney, and local law enforcement. They're making an evaluation of whether it should be a special bulletin notification. And whatever criteria they apply, now you've got, how many offenses did you list? There are at least 20 potential crimes that relate to Pritchett, the sexual registry. And in your minds, now you guys have to, how do you judge which of those, if you're convicted of which offenses, which triggers the notification, or do all of them?
Are there 20 crimes against children?
And there might be less, but
the DOC has their own color scheme that's on their website. And how many colors are there? There aren't 20.
That's not the DOC. That's family law. their information is straight from the DOC website. That was one of the sections that we
Right. Yeah. So there's a way of categorizing somehow. I mean,
well, I mean, I guess just to throw ideas out there.
We're not a private. We're not a private watch group. We're a governmental body, and if we choose to then create a cell notification system selecting persons with certain types of convictions, we've got to give that careful thought in terms of either we perceive that we should notify for all, or do you just pick certain degrees of sexual assault? It's a trick box.
Well, one of the communication we got from a resident was regarding someone whose charge was child solicitation. So that would be down the list. So I would think it is all or nothing. You know, if we've got 30 people that moved in, or we have 30, whatever it is, it should be all or nothing.
I agree with Jim. I mean, that gets us out of the because none of them are good. I mean, it's just, and really, I mean, since we've had, seven since last November, I mean, we're not talking about sending out a mailing every other day. I mean, we'd probably be talking, the way things are going, 10 or 12 mailings a year. And hopefully they don't go any further, or not even that many. But
is that right? I mean, do people leave and come in? I know we get indications of the numbers, but is that usually, are they pretty stable as far as people staying here and we're just adding to it, or do people leave? Do five leave a month and five more come in to replace them? It looks like we've netted zero.
It's not that high, I would say, but as I indicated in the memo, what I listed out was based on me looking at my past list that I provided to the board and saying, okay, well, here's the ones that are here, and on my next list, I see these new names on there. There's some that go. We do have a fair amount of changeover, but I would agree with Trustee Gast. I mean, it's not, we wouldn't be doing it every other day by any means, but I would expect to be doing it, monthly.
We would have done three in June.
Yeah, so it just depends on the numbers, I guess. It's hard to predict, but I wouldn't say it's going to be astronomical, but I would say we're going to do that 12, 13 a year. At the rate we're going.
Can I add something to that?
No, actually, you can't. I'm sorry. We need to open up the rules in order to do, or suspend the rules in order to do that. So, but we're going to get to that in a second. I apologize. Okay, it looks like we're going on the path of every time that someone takes up residency, that it instigates this process, this multi-pronged process of a mailing, and right.
I think it would be important to recognize that in many cases, it's going to be very difficult to do anything prior to the federal mail-in. Even the ones that come in and do the face-to-face and get a sheet of paper signed off by the sheriff's office or me directly, I know I've had someone come in and say, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to do it next weekend. So right. We're not talking, we always have a lot of notice, but, when we get that notice, we'll do it as quickly as possible.
Right. And it will be evidently better than, in some cases, what we're doing now, which is nothing, right? And the DOC is not doing anything.
And that depends on what we do in the ordinance section on when they.
Right. Stop. All right. Unless there are objections, I'm going to suspend the rules and hear from my visitors. Please, can you state your name again for
Rose
the record?
Rose Schauer. I just wanted to reiterate with your idea of sending a notice to everyone, because what our offender was way down on the list, we would not get a notice that it was someone who offended our family member. So that is important that we do cover everyone, and if it is 3 to 4 people a month, maybe you're in watch people that your neighborhood watch and you have volunteers would come in and help you do stuffings or mailings or make sure you have flyers. I agree, I don't think a meeting per se is necessary, but education is. And by educating all, you don't miss something.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak with regard to the notification issue?
Could I add one more to the list?
No.
Okay.
You're out of order.
I want to hear
oh,
from
I'm
our
sorry.
Folks.
Way to go. I do. Notification.
Can you state your name?
Oh, David Van Lana.
Can you state your address, please, Mr. Bellin?
1302 Hastings Street.
Thank you.
I live actually three doors down from Mrs. Showers. I grew up in the family home. I now purchased the family home. My parents built the family home in 1957. Mrs. Showers built her home in 1960. I grew up with these children. They're an awesome family. And if they would have been notified, like you said, five houses down, they would not know that he was living in that neighborhood. If it was further, they would have found out. She could have called you right away and said, oh my gosh, this is the guy that molested my grandson. I'm nervous, I'm sorry. Anyways, none of us knew. And I, my neighbor Barb in 1300 Hastings, she looked on the computer. There are five within a two-block radius of our house. My house, her house, and 1304, and Mrs. Showers, five sexual predators. We did not know this. I did not know this. I still have a flip phone. I do not have a computer. I do not go online. I need a letter. I need a picture. I just feel that I see this guy walk around the block. And a good friend of mine owns the home right next door that is for sale right now. It's a four-bedroom home next door to this guy. People that are buying this home probably will not know this guy is here. And it's probably $100,000-some home, $103,000. But it's a four-bedroom home. And if they don't go online, they'll never know that they're moving right next door to this guy. And I don't know, I just have a heartfelt feeling for the Showers and the neighborhood. I grew up here. I moved to Karen Lane. I bought a home there. I lived on Karen Lane for 7 years before I bought the family home. I love Alloway. And you really got to think about this because it's a beautiful community and we need to change this. You know, that's all I got to say.
Thank you. Anyone who'd like to speak with regard to the notification process, the path we're going down with regard to the notification process? Is there anything we're missing that you'd like us to utilize to notify residents when an offender is going to be residing in their neighborhood? Yes, ma'am, could you please?
Julie Collison, I live on St. Francis Drive, 408. You mentioned notifying the schools. We also have daycare centers. They could be loitering around daycare centers. I thought that might be good just to notify the daycare centers as well. Or any other, you know, place like that where children are going to be staying and cared for.
Thank you.
No problem.
Any other media forms of communication that you think would be helpful or places or people that should be notified as part of this process?
I'm just thinking that...
Sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to come up for the record. And no, you can speak this time. Yeah. I apologize. And it's a pain. Could you state your name and address for the record, please?
Sandy Schauer. I just wanted to say, at a minimum, I agree to that the method of having a mailing to the neighborhood in a certain is the least that should be done. And I don't see how that takes a lot of money or time. As Officer Lochno said, it's, you know, a form letter that can be sent out, and I'm not sure if Alloway Village administrative assistants can help them in the paperwork type of thing. And I also agree that it should be done to across the board and not specifying a special one, because maybe the judgment that put them on the list may be they may have prior ones that maybe for some reason they didn't get on the list or a different type of history.
Right.
So, yeah, and just to reiterate again, not everybody is up with the computers and the phones and everything, so I think a direct mailing to the neighborhoods would be the the least thing that we should do.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other ideas or insight with regard to the notification process? Okay, we're going to take up the rules, and now I'd like to move on to a discussion of the actual ordinance and a path forward with regard to whether we want to review the ordinance and what sorts of options we want to consider, and if there's additional information perhaps from other communities that we want to gather. I think Trustee Gass's point is well taken with regard to the nuts and bolts of the legalities. That might be something that we would want to cover in closed session with our attorney. Trustee Gennery.
Just a quick comment on the sale of a house. Attorney Duffy, doesn't the real estate agency selling the property have to disclose that information?
I think there's a disclosure on the real estate contract that relates to the property that's being sold, but I don't know necessarily the disclosure extends to your neighbors or whatever.
I mean, if someone is buying the house, wouldn't they have to be told that there's a sexual offender living next door?
Dennis, could you use your?
I don't think you're compelled.
There's not a disclosure issue.
To disclose that, but
for the property.
If it's property that's involved with sexually registered individuals, that's a disclosure. Where would that stop? I'm selling my home and
you have three houses
on, and there's like three, five yellow and a red.
But you do have to sign off on all these things about brownfield and everything else. I'm wondering if that's not included in there.
That's for the property itself. And what
correct.
Dennis is saying is that this wouldn't be on the property itself, and so
it's adjacent.
It's adjacent or two doors down, and so how far out would you go?
There may be.
Trustee Harris.
You're putting something on the property owner to know about the neighbors, where if they weren't notified, then they're not. I get a little hairy with that.
All right. Any. Trustee Guest, ideas with regard to the actual ordinance and the path forward. Is it pretty much the consensus of this board that we need to review the current ordinance and explore ways to perhaps tighten it up, if not make it more restrictive in terms of residents, tighten it up from where we are now?
Yes.
Okay. Trustee Guest.
No, I'm just on the notice point first. Can we get photographs of the offenders? Because the gentleman had, I think, a good comment, which is, or if we send it off to the daycares, I mean, to have an actual picture of the person on the notice that we sent out and said, this is the guy.
Yep, it's all online.
Oh, you can get the pictures?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Off our website and the DOC website.
That should be part of the notice, it seems to me.
That would be great. That would be fine. I think how this is going to happen in a practical way, that you're not going to have within the 750-foot radius, you're going to have at least some people who have access to the Internet, and they're going to go online, and they're going to share all kinds of information with everyone. So I still think it's a good idea to have the pictures, but I think the way this is going to work is once one or two people find out, they're going to notify their neighbors who are going to notify their neighbors, and everyone's going to have access to the information.
I think the information that you're going to put out there is going to be almost identical to what's available through the state.
Absolutely.
Because we don't want to...
We're
not going to do any creative writing.
No,
exercises.
No, we don't want to get into that.
Problems in terms of what we're inviting people to either do or not do in terms of the information they're receiving, because when you get your first sexual offender, it's not a special bulletin put out by the state or a press release put out by the state, and it's a sexual offender notification from the village of Alloway, then, what's this, and what do they want me to do, and what, so we're going to have to, the drafting of that notice is we're going to have to give some thought to that.
Right. Trustee Gass.
Then just in terms of the ordinance, I think, Dennis, you said you've helped some neighboring communities usher through, their procedures. I think the way I'd like to handle it is, I think, to get a hold of a few of the other, I know years ago we looked at Green Bay's and we looked at it very extensively, but what I'd like to see is a few more of our neighboring communities and what they're doing with the issue, receive those ordinances so that we can digest those and then, meet with our attorney in closed session to discuss what options we have and what legal pitfalls we may or may not have with respect to different alternatives.
I'm also going to contact the peer to see why they chose to eliminate an existing board. So they had residency restrictions and a board and an appeals board to go along with it. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
And they took away both of them.
Right. They eliminated the areas that where you would have to go to an appeals board to live in the city.
Yeah.
And I think following up on what Randy just mentioned about other examples, Green Bay sort of became the template for all the surrounding communities in Brown County, figuring that, you know, they did it first. They had the most exposure to either claims, federal claims, judicial review. So the ordinances that are around here are remarkably same as to what they did. And I just want to comment because most of your thoughts have come up on in so many other communities, and they're going, why hasn't the legislature created some sort of a uniform policy so that every small community in the state of Wisconsin isn't having the same big discussion about how we're going to deal with sexual offenders, and nobody wants to take ownership of the issue. There isn't a legislature that you can persuade that this is something that you want to sink his teeth into today, because it's not no upside for an elected official at any level to get, well, I'm going to take care of this. As I told you, Steve, it's a great lose-lose issue. Because I can't give you an answer. I'd like to give you the answer. Well, I'll pass an ordinance. I'll get an ordinance. I'll draft it. I'll get it together for a special session next week where we're going to ban from the community. That's the way to go. That's the answer. That's the happy answer that is impermissible. Everything else is
right.
Not it's going to make somebody unhappy.
Senator Colt seems to be pretty interested in the issue. I got multiple calls from one of his staffers that he's very interested, as you know, lives in Alloway, and is very interested in the issue. I'm not sure if he's interested in developing any sort of statute that would cover the entire state, but he seems to be interested in the issue and have an opinion on it.
There was at one time one piece of sort of uniform legislation that never really got too far.
Right.
There was a reaction to the fact that all the individual communities were reacting and were developing their own ordinances, restrictions, boards, like we're going right now this process.
In all the ways that we're losing home rule, like the cell tower details, this is one where they're perfectly willing to give it up.
We can have it.
Interesting. Ms. Bain, did you have something?
Rick, on the DOC website, in order to get the detailed information in the picture, don't you have to agree to some statement? So are we able to give that out, send that out?
I think if we put the link on there, the website is WI, or DOC, WisconsinOffender.org, or whatever it was. That's a general website. From there, it's you have an option. And one of the links on that main page, you know, bold, big bold in the beginning is the sex offender registry program. And then after that page, there is a disclaimer that you have to agree on, you know, with all the fine print. And then it brings you to the page where you can start searching for the information.
So would we be able to mail that out?
That would be a
We can talk about that with Attorney Duffy as to...
We may have a disclaimer.
Specific.
I know in some of the past, before I was in LA, the newsletter that went out, there was sex offender information in my newsletter that I put out. Even when I started, I was doing that. The feedback I got a couple years ago was
residents
thought it was thrown into their face. That's not putting it in the newsletter. But I know that wasn't a newsletter. There was a disclaimer on there saying this information is not to be used, you know, to discriminate, threaten, and all that kind of stuff.
So we'll, again, make sure to run it by Dennis. To all right. Do we have a plan to move forward aside from asking Dennis to produce some of the ordinances from surrounding communities and my contacting De Pere to see why it is that they got rid of their residency restrictions and their accompanying board. Are there any other paths forward that you want to explore? Trustee Harris?
On the other communities that we explore, will we be able to work with any of their law enforcement to see if they've passed something in 2012, 2013, 2011, if they've had any ups or downs in terms of residents with a sexual offense? That might be something else that we see that does look like this type of thing has been more effective as opposed to this type of thing has been less effective. Might be one other information gathering tool.
When you say type of thing, do you mean type of ordinance?
If they put forth this type of ordinance, since that point, have the number of sexual offenders in their community increased or decreased? I don't know if we can get that. I know it's been difficult for DO Lucknow to gather our own information, so it may be difficult to get it from the other communities, but it's worth a shot just to at least ask the question.
And so are you wanting to get at whether or not an ordinance, one particular ordinance from one community has worked better or worse than another ordinance from a different community? Or are you just wondering whether or not it's worked at all? So doing a pre-post in the same community or comparing two different communities that adopted different ordinances?
In a sense, both.
Because from what I hear our Attorney Duffy saying is these ordinances are pretty similar to one another. Is that right? I mean, they all involve some amount of residency restrictions and a board.
I know I'm also, in essence, looking for the silver bullet, the magic bullet of, it looks like it's seeming
to help
here. The
best ordinance to adopt.
Let's head down that direction if that's.
I guess what I'm saying is if there's very little variation in ordinances, then I'm not sure we're going to find significant differences in between two different ordinances and two different communities as far as the how effective they are. I'm not sure if it's worth Officer Lucknow's time, because the
Agreed.
Data are hard to weed through to do that analysis if we really have very little chance of seeing any differences.
I'm going to hand this off to Rick because he did all the statistical stuff, but one of the questions I asked him, because I was just curious, comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges, do we have the numbers from the city of Green Bay which would show the same year by year, either increases, decreases in terms of the people that, the convicted offenders that are living in, and those that pass through the board, and they could not give him that information. They did not have that statistically available.
No.
I was
crazy.
I couldn't believe that wasn't at somebody's fingertips.
Getting back to Trustee Harrison, I think being that ordinances are very similar, we're just going to get a lot of different opinions.
Right.
That's just going to come down to making the phone calls, and then we're going to get probably all over the board, depending on whether people like him or not.
Thank you.
And I don't know if we need the best ordinance. We need a good one, or a better one than we have now, considering the context of where we are. I think things have changed since 6 years ago when we first adopted this ordinance, and given the recent trends, we just need a better ordinance to deal with these trends than we currently have. Anything else with regard to moving forward and reviewing the ordinance that would come back at the next board meeting for whatever we deem appropriate? I'm not sure we have too many options with regard to what the how big the residency zones are, I guess, is a variable, but you have to have a board if you have residency restrictions, and so there aren't too many options as to how you can implement this, I don't think. But, unless there are objections, I'm going to suspend the rules and open it up to our visitors. Is there anyone who would like to speak with regard to the ordinance? Yes, sir.
Good evening. Ted Collison over at St. Francis. And I'd like to start off with, again, thank you to the board and everything you guys are doing, and the fact that you are publicly addressing this very uncomfortable and ugly situation. I do appreciate that. That takes courage, and it's not something that's obviously just being swept under the carpet. Sheriff, well, now I'm hearing everyone keeps saying, well, there's more for you to do, more for you to do, more for you to do. I think that's a very dangerous game. And I, of course, would never dream to speak for him, but I think that's asking an awful lot with is it 90-plus offenders in our village now that we have?
25.
In the zip code of 45301, I thought we had...
That's Green Bay.
But that includes...
54301.
Big chunk of Green Bay. In Alway, like Trustee Raffer said, with the add-ons from the last couple months, that's
31. So, monitoring these 31, then also going for town or neighborhood meetings, I would worry that would be an awful lot taken away from other time, but again, that's been addressed. For my own curiosity, we brought up a few things that may be negatives to trying to, I guess, go radical the other side of this. So if I could ask the board or anyone here to try and help me understand this, what is the downside to making these restrictions? Say, for instance, we throw out there you can't be within 1,000 feet of a park, a public path, a school, a bus route, any village building, anything like that. And we also say if there are the remaining areas, you may live in that area if you have certified signed acceptance by your five surrounding neighbors. So I would view that as an absolute extreme the other way, making it almost impossible for one of these convicted offenders to live in this area. So my question to the room, if I'm allowed to do that, is what is the downside to that? Help me understand the downside to that so that we can have a frank discussion. Because sure. I want to understand it from the other side as well.
Sure. And as we, you know, we said, the way, and this was 6 years ago, six plus years ago, I think, the reason that the board voted the way that it did and adopted the ordinance that it did is because the research suggested when you become overly or quite restrictive, then, and our offender has no place to live, they just don't register. So they end up living in your community, you just don't know it. And we thought that was more of a risk to residents than knowing where these people reside. So that's a downside of overly restrictive residency ordinances. Another downside, and I'm not saying that this justifies not doing it, is the time and expense of the review boards that by definition accompany residency restrictions. You have to have a review board. You can't just say you can't live here. As Attorney Duffy said, it's unconstitutional to say because of this you cannot live anywhere in our village. You can develop a residency restriction that in essence dictates that there's very little place to go, and then by accompanying those residency restrictions you need this appeals board, which Green Bay has. And that takes a lot of time and resources to run. Any other negatives to having restrictive residency ordinances that I'm not thinking of?
Well, and you always want to be mindful of the legalities of all of it, because we clearly don't want to pass something that, you know, we run a fair risk of it being found unconstitutional and the village therefore bearing expenses or damages, so we want to make sure whatever we do is legal. And there just seems to be, you know, what the problem with the residency board always seems to be, you know, some measure of subjectivity. You know, I mean, you know, how do we create the right kind of standards to make sure that it's fair and impartial? Because as we saw with Mr. Brandt moving on in on Taft Street, you know, that board said yes originally, and then, you know, the public outcry, you know, they said no. So it's trying to balance all of those different things. But then that gets back into more of a resource, you know, kind of question than an implementation question.
Okay. Well, again, as I'm sure you received the letter that my wife and I wrote, we're here to help. I'm sure everybody here, I would imagine, is here to help. We're not here to point fingers. Please call us if we can.
Much appreciated, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So anyone else who'd like to talk, speak with regard to the actual ordinance and the path that the board seems to be taking towards reviewing it? Okay, hearing none, we'll take up the rules. Is there anything further from the board with regard to the direction that we're going down? Attorney Duffy has a little homework to do. I have a little homework to do. D.O. Lopno has a little homework to do with regard to the process, especially. So
No, and I think the focus on the new ordinance, you know, which you know, I guess would have to be some kind of enhanced, you know, residency, you know, restrictions. It's always been the sense of the board that, you know, each community, you know, has to bear its proportionate share of these kind of offenders, and that's why we didn't adopt the Green Bay ordinance, and we took kind of a wait and see approach. And for many years, it clearly appeared to the board that we were not bearing a disproportionate share to our neighboring communities. It was kind of status quo, but it's this recent development in the last year.
It's November.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing a spike. And luckily, the issue came to the forefront so we could address these issues and look at it. But, you know, it would be nice to say you just can't live in our community, but that's not fair to our neighbors either. I mean, everybody should bear their fair share of the burden, but we've got to figure out why and how to fix the problem that has recently come to light that we seem to be getting a lot more in the recent past.
And you hate to have a knee-jerk reaction because, you know, like the stock market, if you pick out any one particular point in time, it may look like something's going really well or really bad, but if you look at it in the grander scheme of things, it's just part of the pattern of fluctuation in the data. But it seems odd, like Krusty Gass said, we were on a slow incline, maybe, and not to disproportionate to other communities, because as Officer Lopnow said, there's just more and more of these people being released into the communities. But then since last November, there's just been this upshoot, and as Trustee Raptor mentioned, you know, 3 in 1 month, it seems like there's something behind those numbers and not just fluctuations in the data. So,
Steve?
Yes, Trustee Raptor.
I see the problem, or a big part of the problem being that we have a very lax policy or very lax ordinance. On the other side, to answer your question about what happens if it's too restrictive, I think if it's too restrictive, you're not solving the problem. Because if you take a look at the sex offenders who are living in Alloway, about 95% of them live somewhere else. So a more restrictive, it's my opinion, unscientific opinion, but that people who are living in Alloway live somewhere else when they created the crime, and I don't know if it's Green Bay, I don't know if it's anywhere where what the ordinances were, but my guess is they're not living where they were and they're coming here. It's too easy. If we had a problem with if we had 25 people who lived in Alloway were sex offenders while they lived here and they got out of jail and wanted to live here, I think it would be a different problem we'd be trying to deal with. But right now, we just have to put up a gate and slow them down and figure out what's going on. And thinking about all this, like when some of the folks came up and said, we just found out that he's been here for months. You know, when I was a kid, my parents would tell me, stay away from that house. You know, walk on the other side. Don't pay attention. But we were told not to, not why, but just stay away. And part of it's a big part of it's education and knowledge and having the right speed bumps in place to make people think twice.
I know this isn't going to be a popular statement. You use the word lax, and I know this isn't how you meant it. I think that I stick to our guns at that time, and in that context, when we adopted the ordinance, it was, it was not a knee-jerk reaction. It was, we think, a very well-researched and a very concerted decision. And I think it was the responsible decision to not do what Green Bay did, given the available data. I just think that context and the times have changed, mm-hmm. especially given this influx of offenders into Alloway. And I do agree that we have to sort of address this issue now. And so it may be, I'm not sure if everybody used the word lax, because that sort of insinuates that we didn't really think about it and just sort of put in a very permissive policy. But it was very intentional based on the available research at the time.
No offense intended.
Yeah, I understand that.
Greatest respect intended.
Trustee Gass.
Well, and as we develop the ordinance, too, I mean, one of the other things that, I mean, there's a full spectrum and wide array of the offenses. And right. I know we were always mindful. I mean, a lot of the offenders, you know, you actually feel bad for some of these. I mean, I mean, they're the Romeo and Juliet ones. They're the, you know, kid who might be 18, and he's dating a 17-year-old girlfriend, or, you know. I mean, they aren't evil people. So, I mean, it's always difficult to try to craft these things to try to get to what you really want to get at and not overly penalize the ones that, you know, are, at least in my mind, a little bit more on the innocent side.
Trustee Harris.
Just had a different idea that maybe Attorney Duffy can help let me know if it's a reasonable path to follow. Along with the administration of it, I know that would be a mess too, but it might just head us into a different idea. What about a residency density restriction? Once there are X amount of sexual offenders within a certain area, then it's limited, so that you can't have 5-6 people within a certain radius. Again, I'm not sure how we'd ever administer that, or if it would even be something that would be enforceable, but it may also just establish a different idea of something we could do.
I've not heard of anybody that's used that alone. people have been able to, or communities have been able to justify restrictive zones based on offenses committed against children, then having appeals for people that may qualify to live in restricted areas. And statistically, I don't know how they've demonstrated to the courts that that's an effective police power for the community. And even if you go forward with this, I think the greater weight of the evidence that scientific and third parties have developed is that these, quote, zones and residency ordinances, and they are simply just that, ordinances. Statistically, I don't think that you're demonstrating that you're creating additional safety for the members in your community. But I believe our objective is to slow down the number of people that are being placed by the Department of Correction in the Village of Alloway, so that we have a fewer number. Will that then decrease the likelihood of reoffending or offenses against children by convicted sexual offenders in the community? The jury's totally out on all that. All this has been looked at pretty hard. Would fewer sex offenders per square mile mean that children living in that square mile are going to do or have a safer or higher quality of life than the people that have four per square mile? It's difficult.
We kind of had this discussion when we adopted the current density ordinance with, you know, living under the same roof, in essence, and it's prohibited in Alloway. Because we talked about what about, you know, duplexes where they're, or even single-family homes that is living right next to one another. There's a string of them. Our current ordinance doesn't address that. It's a different type of density that involves mm-hmm. neighborhoods instead of individual households. I would certainly think there's a correlation, though, Dennis, between children being safer and there being a smaller density of offenders.
I think you could make the argument if you had no convicted sex offenders in the community that would probably be a good thing.
Right. And if you have...
But I don't think you could.
Right. And if you had high density, large numbers, that
yeah, five
probably could argue that your children would be less safe.
Five of them living in a house next door would really be... It's just not a common sense, not scientific. Would be, yeah, that's a very, very bad idea.
Right. What about five of them living in five houses next to one another in the same neighborhood? Would that be...
I agree that would be an equally bad idea.
So that's kind of what Trustee Harris is getting at, is some sort of density applied to neighborhoods rather than just applied to individual households. I think it's worthy of its
point. I'd be glad to look at it and see how that's been looked at by courts in terms of a restriction where you just pick a number and say that, you know, what number you know, were we happy, or were we safe at 15? Or at what number? And what number caused this board all of a sudden? Is it 31? Is that the number that creates a serious alarm? It's very difficult political.
But we're really not talking about numbers right now. We're talking about density in neighborhoods.
We're talking about proportion. We're always talking about proportion.
No, I mean, this is even different than that, I think. That's right. I mean, this is why Green Bay started their ordinance. They thought the proportion was wrong. They had too many relative to the surrounding communities. But I think what Trustee Harris is talking about is even different than that. It's talking about density in neighborhoods rather than density in houses.
It still comes down to proportion. It's proportion. It's a number versus, density proportion.
It isn't. It's not the same.
I think what got our attention is
so we could have this. I'm sorry. We could have the same number of offenders.
We're talking about the same thing. We
could have the same number of offenders in Alloway that we have now. And what Trustee Harris is saying is he doesn't want them all living in one neighborhood. So it's not a proportion of the number of offenders we have in Alloway relative to surrounding communities. It's where are they living. We don't want offenders living all in within the 5-block area in the village.
I agree with that. And then the other argument is, well, why don't we just select a block where they should all live? And then, you know, you'd have...
That would be like Alcatraz, right? I view it from the opposite viewpoint. I view it as our density ordinance expanded rather than about the numbers game.
I'll look at it.
Trustee Harris, do you have something else?
No. Attorney Duffy just commented what got our attention, and I think the ordinal increase got our attention because we did increase. What was the trigger? It wasn't a certain number. I think it was just that it seemed like
the number increased.
I don't think that it got to a certain number was the impetus for addressing this. That's all.
And just talking to Rick, I was trying to figure out. Green Bay's got so many, you know, sex offenders per their population, and then all of a sudden we've got a certain number per our population of 13,000 or whatever, and then what's fair? And we're willing to, in fairness, each community should be willing to bear a certain number. And then going back to the point, well, if they were our people, it would be even probably more acceptable because if we had 15 sex offenders who had committed their crimes and had been long-term residents in the village of Alloway, would we be more comfortable with them returning and accepting our responsibility as a community to having them live here because they were here when the crimes were committed? Or are we getting people from, you know, throughout the state of Wisconsin that somehow are finding a way because of our lack of restriction or whatever to reside here or the number of apartments and residents that are available for rent? And this also comes down to the Department of Corrections. They don't have our interests or our community's interests at heart in placement. As long as they satisfy the requirements of the law and get people under their supervision, place somebody, then their job's done and they'll continue to supervise them wherever they are. And that's part of the problem. And then part of the corrections is seeing that there's a path of least resistance here that maybe didn't exist before, and Green Bay is becoming more strict. And as a result, our numbers are going up, and that's what we're reacting to.
Right. They don't play. The DOC doesn't place. They approve.
Density portion.
Okay, is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I will move that Officer Lotnow explore the notice policy, you know, in accordance with the discussions of the board this evening, and that we postpone until next meeting a closed session component to discuss potential ordinance revision options.
I'll second. I'd like to add that to the open session meeting as well, however, for the July 15th meeting.
Oh, sure.
Dennis, you look confused.
Well, I'm not confused. It's more of a It's more of a scheduling thing. I'm on vacation next week, so for...
This would be the 15th.
Right. So
but he's got some...
Oh, yes, some work to do.
How about first?
I thought you were efficient, Dennis.
How about first?
I don't know who told you that, Steve.
First meeting in August?
Sure. I'd like to leave it on the next board agenda in open session, just in case there's something further that we want to discuss or if there are residents who want to give their input who couldn't be here tonight. So the first meeting in August with the for closed session and open session and the next board meeting for open session. Is that correct, Trustee Gates?
That's correct.
Okay, I'll maintain my second discussion.
You don't need a motion for the link on the website and the notification.
No, he said it's part of the consistent with the discussions cool. that took place. Officer Lautner, do you have all the elements of that process? If not, Ms. Bainan would probably have them down, or you could talk to one of the board members.
Yeah, real quick, this is what I have scribbled down. Make sure we have a link to the DOC website, possibly doing announcements directly on our website for notifications, and then doing the form, getting a form set up for mailings within 750 feet radius.
Yep.
And then also possibly notification directly to schools or daycares.
Right. And you know the notification letter, if you could draft that and then run it by Attorney Duffy before we actually implement that. That's all I had on my list. Is there anything else? Trustee Harris?
Is there an easy way for us to get I was the one who brought up the 750 as an idea of being a little bit more than 500, but just to get a visualization of how far it would be out from one or two points within the village, just so that the board members have an idea of exactly how far out that is before we vote on a specific distance? Is that easy to...
That's easy to generate the map.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we just want to pass this now, though, and... I mean, either we can have
later,
Trustee Lautner generate something, or we can go online, and it's pretty easy to go online and do it ourselves.
Okay.
And then if you have reservations about, and you think it needs to be increased, we can always revisit or rescind the at the next meeting. It would have to take place at the next meeting. Then. Okay. Reconsider, actually, not rescind.
He's that? Just exploring the notice policy. You're not... adopt it, correct?
Yes.
The motion was for him to explore it.
Yeah, to craft a policy consistent with our discussions tonight, which would then come back to the board, because we'd have to approve the form of the notification.
Right, okay.
And then we can
discuss. It's just a policy. We don't, I mean, the board doesn't even have to vote on policy. This is a procedural issue with the DEO. So either way it's fine. Right.
But I mean, the 750 wouldn't be set in stone in
right.
either.
Right, that's true. Right.
So.
Okay. Anything further? All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Action regarding the appointment of Darren Atkins to a committee, commission, or board. This is held over from the first meeting in June. I would like to make a motion that we appoint Mr. Atkins to the Historic Preservation Committee and the Ethics Committee. Is there a second? Trustee Dart? Discussion? I have to thank Mr. Atkins publicly. He volunteered to do whatever we needed him to do. And so the reason that this is a little bit delayed is we had a couple of other people, you can see a little bit farther down on the list, who wanted to participate and wanted to participate in specific ways, so I had to sort of think about doing some readjusting. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.